to call this meeting of the Legacy Funding Division to order for March 13th. And we do have a quorum. And I would like to have the approval of the March 6th minutes. Representative Pepin, I know you were perusing those earlier. Would you care to move that?
I will move the minutes of March 6th.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes have passed. Just to give you a little perspective of where we're going with some of this stuff right now. We are going to today listen to several bills that we are going to lay over for possible inclusion in a omnibus bill. That bill, the vehicle for that bill is the infamous 2430, the website creation. And so we'll be today and
What day is this? Tuesday.
Today and tomorrow we will be dealing with bills that we will be compiling. And then next Tuesday we will be hearing, bringing back off the table the bill by Representative McNamara, the Lessard-Sams bill. We will consider that next Tuesday. Also, the following day, then Wednesday, and if we get done with Representative McNamara's Lessard-Sams, there will probably be some other bills on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, we will have the bill put together next week. Also, we have Representative Torkelson in there, I believe on, what did I tell you, Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yeah, you did.
Thank you. Everyone wants to help. We'll have Representative Torkelson's bill in there as well next week and put it all together on Wednesday. So any questions on that?
Not yet.
Well, today I'm going to just break into the order a little bit because we do have some testifiers here that I have busy schedules. I'm going to do one of my bills first today. It's a very busy day. If I appear a tad harried today, it's been an unusual day. I've got to find. There it is. So, Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, would you wish to move your bill?
Thank you, Representative Keel. I would move that House File 2767 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair and members, this but what we are doing here, this is some of the supplemental money that became available. We received approximately $2.4 million that we didn't have at the end of last session. $800,000 of that is from money that was not spent by the Historical Society. And I'll be discussing that in a later bill today. This money, the rest of it is from a better performance by sales tax collections than we'd expected. It's not a lot of money, but around $1.3 billion, million dollars more.
That's a lot to me.
Yeah, well, about $1.3 million more than we had expected that we could put some of into various projects. And one of them that I'm looking at is $600,000 for a film production incentive program. Using this money, we do disperse or distribute some money to the Minnesota Film Board, and this money would be going through the Department of Administration to the Independent Feature Project Minnesota, a group that also works with the film industry in Minnesota. And the purpose of using both the Film Board and IFP is to basically broaden the net of contacts and try to really, again, broaden our base in the film industry in Minnesota. And so what we're trying to do through this is to encourage and to stimulate our Minnesota film industry. We are trying to, wherever possible, to the greatest extent possible, use Minnesota products, Minnesota actors, Minnesota workers, the production costs, as much as possible in Minnesota. Producer must submit proper documentation of eligible production costs incurred to the Commissioner of Administration, so they have to present receipts before they are reimbursed for the grant that would be given by the Independent Feature Project. So money goes to the Department of Administration. The IFP becomes the grantor then of the funds. It will be through competitive grants. Applications are made, and then the grantee must submit the expenses prior to being given the grant money. So I do have some folks from IFP here today. They want to give some testimony.
Welcome, and would you please identify yourself for the record?
My name is Lou Lippold. I'm the director of funding.
I'm sorry, can you speak in the mic? We can't hear you. Okay. Thank you.
I'm Lou Lippold. I'm the director of funding programs at Independent Feature Project, IFP, Minnesota. This is Heidi Schuster. She's a member of the board of IFP. IFP is a nonprofit arts organization supporting media artists in Minnesota. I've worked there for 4.5 years as the administrator of IFP's re-granting programs, primarily for the McKnight Foundation, their filmmaking and screenwriting fellowship programs. We re-grant funding through a juried process using industry professionals as our jurors for selection of the grantees. Representative Erdahl approached Jane Minton, our executive director at IFP. She's out of town today, so she couldn't be here to testify herself. He requested a proposal for how IFP would address the disbursement of these discretionary funds from the Legacy Amendment. Jane drafted a proposal, and then she and IFP's board president discussed that with Representative Erdahl. IFP is fully capable of managing the funds we're discussing today, provided we understand fully what the restrictions are that would be placed on the recipients and their projects to qualify them for the funding. And Heidi has some additional comments. Oh, no? All right. We're both here to answer questions if they're...
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any questions from members?
The members have any questions? Any more testifiers? Any questions from the audience? Or testifiers from the audience? I don't think so. Representative Murphy.
Could you tell us a little bit about the films that have received grants already?
IFP has been administering filmmaking and screenwriting grants primarily through the McKnight Foundation for over 15 years, so there have been quite a few. Recently, someone named Brady Kiernan had a film which I hope you saw. It was called Stuck Between Stations. He received that award in 2011. And it premiered at a national film festival, Tribeca Film Festival in New York, and it's being released on DVD now. So that's Stuck Between Stations. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Minneapolis is featured prominently in it. There's a great diversity of projects that we have administered. They're both narrative feature projects, short films, animations, and documentaries. So it pretty much runs the gamut of independent types of independent films. Some of them go on to national prominence, and some are more Minnesota interest.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, ma'am. Are the screenwriters and the filmmakers mostly Minnesotans?
In the case of the McKnight Foundation grant fellowships, they are required to be Minnesota residents.
And Minnesota talents?
Excuse me?
And Minnesota talents that are used in the film?
I would say that primarily that is the case, although that's not a requirement of these fellowships.
And are
Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, are the grants that have been presented to the Knights Foundation, and I understand that this will be different from that, have they been awarded to people statewide?
Ms. Leopold.
Madam Chair and Representative, yes. I think primarily our applicants are from the Twin Cities area, but they are from throughout the state of Minnesota.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I probably should have asked more details when I signed on to the bill, but do we have outcomes for this appropriation, and do we have a statute of our expectations?
Ms. Leopold, Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Murphy. I think that our outcomes will be determined by, are we successful in bringing people, having people in Minnesota or bringing people to Minnesota to make movies, and the income generated by those movies or documentaries will be our outcomes.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, does the films have to be about Minnesota and Minnesotans and our land and our people?
Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Diversity.
Representative Murphy. They don't all have to be about Minnesota. I mean, think of the movie Fargo, which,
You betcha.
Which wasn't entirely made in Minnesota. Of course, it certainly had a Minnesota theme to it. But the goal here is to have movies made in Minnesota using Minnesota companies, hiring Minnesota people, mm-hmm. generating income for Minnesota's economy. Now, I'm guessing that a preponderance of those movies made here would be about Minnesota. There are movies like we heard earlier this morning, Gran Torino, which was supposed to have been made here, but because of the incentives offered by other places like Detroit, they had to move the movie to Detroit and make it there. And so again, I do think that the preponderance of movies made under this and with our film board funding that we do as well, are about and by Minnesotans.
And
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, then how is this going to be different than what the Film Board is doing and what the Snowbait is doing?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I think that one difference here, the way that I envision this, is that we'll be concentrating more on the beginnings, on the production end, and larger amounts of money. I anticipate, whereas the Snowbait could be tens of thousands, that this can be much more than that. Of the 600,000, might be possibly 2-3 projects granted. So it's more money at the beginning of the project.
Representative Murphy.
One final question then, I think. Representative Erdahl, do you envision that these will be new organizations or new ideas rather than people that have sold their ideas to TPT or to Channel 8 or filmmaking places and public broadcasting, screenplays and things that are separate from that?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm thinking a lot of this would be first-time projects. Yes.
Thank
you. Okay. Representative Pepin, did you have a question? Oh, sorry.
You know, I think I'm going to pass.
Okay.
That's good.
Are there any other questions? Chair Erdahl, I do have to share that the author of Gran Torino is a student from, resident from Crookston, Minnesota. He now lives in the metro area, but he grew up in Crookston. Good things come out of there. Is there any other testifiers at all? I guess.
I didn't sign before you, General.
Sure. Yes. Will you please come forward and identify yourself for the record?
Good afternoon, members of the committee, Chair. My name is Mark Hughes, and I happen to be an executive producer in cable television here in the Twin Cities. Now, I've had a little bit of great experience with the IFP. I've looked into getting funding for even my type of show, which isn't a movie, but in years past, we tried making movies in Minnesota, and due to weather and all these other things, we've had some not-so-good experiences. But I think due to our nature's economy and Minnesota as a whole, we've lost the Ford plant now. We should try to forge ahead and find new ideas such as the IFP and movie making. So I urge all of you to take a good look at this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wondered if there was anybody available from the Department of Administration. I was interested in hearing more about how this might be administered or what their thoughts were on this.
Is there anybody from the administration here? Would you like to come speak to us? He looked a little reluctant.
But willing.
Yes.
Thank you.
Would you please identify yourself for the record?
My name is Kurt Yoakum. I'm the legislative liaison with the Department of Administration. And fortunately, our folks from Office Grant Management, the two folks that we have that run that office, are actually out doing some grant administration right at the moment, so they're unable to be here. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to answer the question. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Any other questions, Representative Green? Okay. Mr. Chair, are you ready to renew your motion?
I'd like to renew my motion. We'll lay this over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Where are we going next?
I got one more bill.
Oh.
Now.
Okay. When you are ready, you can identify where we're going, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We now have House File 2653, which we will also lay over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And this appropriates $100,000 from the Arts and Cultural Fund to the Minnesota Historical Society to commemorate the American Civil War and the Dakota conflict, as it says here, also the U.S.-Dakota War of 1862. This funding would be used by the Civil War Commemoration Task Force. And have a task force has been created to work on remembering, observing the American Civil War and on the U.S.-Dakota War of 1862. This is the 150th anniversary of those two conflicts, very important events in American history. The American Civil War is our dividing point. Our history is measured up to and from the Civil War. The Dakota War, of course, is one of the great tragedies in Minnesota history. It is a very important episode to mark and observe. And what we're trying to do through this task force is to find ways to properly make these observances. I have with me today, where did we go?
Do we lose your testifier?
I had the Secretary of State with me in just a moment ago, and he is the co-chair with me of the task force, and also Mr. Daryl Sanis, a member of the task force, is here, and I'll ask him to give some examples of how this money could be spent.
Welcome, and will you identify yourself for the committee, please?
Madam Chair, I'm Daryl Sanis from Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. I was appointed by Governor Dayton last spring to serve on the Civil War Task Force. Co-chairs of that group are Representative Erdahl and Secretary of State Mark Ritchie, and then there's approximately 8 to 10 citizens from around Minnesota that were also appointed to serve on the task force now through the summer of 2015. I decided to join that task force because I thought it was a very important opportunity for Minnesota as well as all states to commemorate the role of the soldiers that served and to remember what happened. It's also a great opportunity for us to educate on the Civil War. There's lots of schools that don't even have Civil War or Dakota War in their curriculum anymore. I think it's very important that we really focus on education for the next 3 years to bring that back with all kinds of events and programming. We also need to commemorate Minnesota's role in that war by doing events and programmings throughout the South and the East where the Minnesota men fought. Obviously, the problem with getting any of this done is funds to do it. We have lots of great ideas, and we have people that are going to volunteer lots of time, but we need some funding to get these things going. There are several groups that we can partner with to do these things. There are events and programs going on, but we need to partner with the Minnesota Historical Society. We need to partner with all of our county library systems, with local and county historical societies, and work with them on events and programming. We need to educate Minnesotans, and we really need to focus on our K-12 and really get special programming to them if they're not getting it through their school systems. So that's just a few of my ideas. There's obviously many more things that we're working on, but it would be several minutes to try to get through all of those.
Thank you, Mr. Sanis. Secretary Ritchie, welcome to our committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Ritchie, Secretary of State, and co-chair with Representative Erdahl of the Civil War Sesquicentennial Task Force.
Thank you. Do you have anything else you would like to
Oh, I'm very sorry that I was late, Madam Chair.
Actually, he was early. Yeah. And then he was late.
But
we're still going.
The group of people who stepped forward from around the state, from every corner of the state, in many different ages, who've come together in this task force, plus the other citizens who've also come in a really devoted way, have gotten off to a fast start, and we are very excited about what we've gotten done and our plans for over this entire four-year period. We were behind a few of the other states who jumped out in front and really got some great things going, but we're catching up, and it's been a great partnership with Representative Erdahl and with the other members of the task force. So thank you again for this consideration.
Sure. Thank you. Do any of the members have questions? Any other testifiers? Looks like it's pretty quiet. Representative Chair Erdahl, we're going to lay this bill over. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, just thank you for your attention. And there'll now be a commercial break with Representative Biskins, and I'll come back later.
It sounds like we're going to have, what, a 5-10 minute break here?
Well, we may give Representative Biskins a little more time.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, there he is.
Thank you very much. Members, we're just going to let them set up the audio visual, so it'll take a few minutes. Are we ready, Chair Biskins?
No. Well, kill it.
We'll at least have him.
Representative.
There you go.
Oh. Representative Torkelson, are you going to move these bills?
I am, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 2546 and House File 2637 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you. Representative Biskins, would you like to expound on this?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for allowing me before you today. Due to technical difficulties, I do have a really compelling speech that was given before this legislative body less than a month ago, and rather than being able to play it, I'd like to read it for you verbatim. It was the governor of the state of Minnesota, Governor Mark Dayton, who said, as stewards of the public trust, I ask us to leave one final legacy to future generations of Minnesotans. Our wonderful state capitol building is wearing down and falling apart. We can either wait until somebody is seriously injured or worse, when the public outcry will compel action, or we can act now. I am asking you legislators to make the most unselfish vote of your careers, to kick yourselves, me, and everyone else out of the Capitol as needed for the 4 years necessary to renovate this building and to make it both functional and safe for the next 100 years. It will be hard on us all, but so much better for those who follow us. This is the essence of selfless stewardship, and it epitomizes the kind of legacy for which our children and grandchildren will be grateful. Madam Chair, members, I know I didn't deliver it quite as well as the governor, and thank you for allowing me to read that into the record. But I think those are words that I took to heart, and many people here at the legislature took to heart, and I know our governor was incredibly sincere about those words. And what the governor has done, members of the legislature, is he's thrown down the gauntlet, and that's a good thing. Right? He has created a challenge for us, and it's up to us to meet this challenge. Now, members of the legislature, I did take it upon myself to ask the governor if he would be interested in coming to testify before this committee, letting him know that I had a couple of bills on the docket. And much to his credit, Madam Chair, yesterday while I was sitting in taxes, yesterday evening, I received a text message that I promised the governor I would read verbatim into record and then publicly thank him for responding back. He says, "Mark, with all respect, I favor bonding for what is clearly a physical asset preservation project. Thanks for asking, though, and thanks for taking on the challenge of getting the project done." Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me before this committee, and I seriously ask you to join both the governor and I in taking on the challenge of getting this project done. The two bills you have before you look at how we can utilize current funding streams into the state revenue to accomplish that goal. It is to use the legacy dollars to fix up the Capitol. Pretty simple concept. House File 2546 authorizes the state to issue bonds for the entire project. The entire project as laid out by the Capitol Commission, and many of you have probably seen this report, which talks not only to the projects that they look to do, but the dire necessity for those projects. It authorizes the state to issue $241 million in bonds, and then the bonds are repaid within approximately 6 years when you account for debt service at the estimated $50 to $52 million a year that comes into the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. So, if that were to be passed this year and completed, the projects would be, the bonds would be paid back by approximately 2019. That would still leave until 2034 to continue to use Arts and Cultural Heritage Funds for other very worthwhile and worthy projects. The other piece of legislation that is before you is House File 2637. And what House File 2637 does is looks at it a different way, and probably is the bill I most favor because then all of the dollars are going to the renovation and none going to debt service. What 2637 does is it commits $1 million in fiscal year 13 for getting the bids let, getting the final planning and staging done, and then it commits $30 million from fiscal year 14 to fiscal year 21 from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for the renovation. Now, if we do the quick math, that comes to about $210 million. And working with my Senate author on this piece of legislation, Representative Ortman, she has studied the comprehensive master plan and believes that this is not the Cadillac, not the Mercedes-Benz, but probably the high-end Rolls-Royce of projects, and the committee could look at whittling them down. But both of these bills are before the committee for your consideration on whichever way you would like to do this. Now, the rationale, all right? Of course, the comp plan itself is strong rationale for why we need to do this, why we need to do this now. The governor's speech, strong rationale for why we need to do this and why we need to do this now. I do have one other piece of evidence, Mr. Chair, that I'm going to ask a page to pass around. Members of the committee, this is your capital, scooped up by a constituent off of the sidewalk, right? Just as a demonstration of what the devil is happening to our capital, right? And the urgency for doing this. Right? Some of the questions we're going to get, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the first, of course, is this a legal use of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and its revenue? I would like to, if I could, Mr. Chair, read a number of pieces into the record, because both voter and legislative intent are critically important, to making a decision amongst us is whether or not this is legal. Now, as I make the case for whether or not this is legal, I will also say I am not making a case as to whether or not somebody will sue. All right. Yeah. In the state of Minnesota, United States of America, anybody can sue anyone for anything. All right. So I'm not saying this will prevent all lawsuits. Of course not. All right. That'd be a silly statement. But I think the legislative intent is very, very important. So the first thing I'm going to turn to members is the Constitution of the United States of Minnesota, Article 11. And in Article 11, I'm going to quote verbatim, and 19.75% shall be deposited in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and may be spent only for arts, arts education, and arts access, and to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. That is the entirety of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund language that we find in our Constitution. What was the intent of the voters? You can simply read by did they vote yay or nay to those words. And of course they voted yay to those words. And those words conclude with to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. I think constitutionally there'd be little question that this is within the purview to move this forward. I'm also like to read into the records, members of the committee, comments by Mr. Stephen Elliott, the director of the Minnesota Historical Society, who says, and I quote, as we enter the second biennium since the passage of the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment, we at the Minnesota Historical Society are eager to share the value and exciting history initiatives touching Minnesota around the state, all made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. He then goes on to list a number of areas in which they have helped the state of Minnesota, and there is one, and I quote, preservation. Like environmental resources, once historical resources are gone, they can never be replaced. ACHF support is helping local historical organizations statewide protect fragile collections and historical buildings. We are helping buildings statewide with this revenue. So, I think clearly we've seen what the Constitution intended. Clearly, we've seen what advocates and users of the funds intended. Well, how about the legislators who actually moved and passed this into law? Members of the committee, I want to direct their attention to comments that were made as this bill was moving forward on the Senate floor when the author of the bill in the Senate, Senator Larry Pogemiller, was having a dialogue with Senator Sandy Pappas. Senator Pogemiller noted, among other remarks, and this is, by the way, from a document from nonpartisan House research staff Mark Shepard, Senator Pogemiller said that the reason for calling the fund in his amendment a cultural legacy fund was that broader intent and certain specifics were better decided by legislative action. very specifically, Senator Pogemiller, in moving this language forward, wanted a broad definition of cultural heritage fund. He said so, and I quoted his words verbatim. I also have a quote from Representative Tony Sertich, who at the time was the majority leader, when he said on the House floor, in response to a question asked by Representative Emmer, Representative Sertich responded, "Actually, it's up to the legislature when it comes to dictating how these funds are to be used." Last piece I'll read in record when it comes to legislative intent, members, is a piece from Senate nonpartisan staff. Ms. Joanne Zoff, a Senate counsel, who said in response to a question by Senator Julianne Ortman asked of her just this past December, December 5th, 2011, in a letter sent to her, "There is no statutory language that provides any amplification of or limitation on the expenditures under this provision, and to date there has been no litigation on the issue. The Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund is completely controlled by the legislature." Members of this committee and members of the House and Senate, we do have, and of course in conjunction with the governor, we do have control over how this money is being spent. Now, the last thing I'm going to point out, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, is a couple of things. Number one, I have heard some concerns that capital projects were never meant as an intended use of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Right. Well, it may surprise members of this committee that I have a list here right now of more than 30 capital projects since the inception of this fund that of course has been funded. In Brown County, the Grand Center for Arts and Culture Inc. Used $100,000 for accessibility and interior systems. Carver County, the Carver County Historical Society, Andrew Peterson Farmstead used $27,000 for barn foundation restoration. Hennepin County used $82,000 of these dollars for roof replacement. Members, I can go on and on, talk about Hennepin County using the money from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for a fence restoration project around a memorial cemetery. I've got over 30 of them, right, on this list. Clearly, the statement that you cannot use this money for capital projects doesn't hold water, because of course you folks have not approved illegal use of these funds, and yet these were all approved uses of the funds. Finally, members, I have at my disposal, and I can pass out to any members who are interested, and I'm sure you have seen the auditor's report from Mr. James Nobles when it comes to this whole debate about supplant versus supplement. That is an incredibly gray area. But the state auditor or legislative auditor has come down on the side that the legislature is the final arbiter of these funds, as it should be. Members, in summary, the governor laid down a challenge to us, right? It's a challenge well documented both in this report and in this little jar. Will it be an easy challenge to meet? No, nothing's easy here, right? If it was easy, anyone could be elected, and I know there are special people around you who have certificates, all right? And I applaud you for running for office, taking up the challenge, and I hope you join the governor and I in meeting the challenge of getting that capital fixed. Mr. Chairman, I do not have any testifiers here today because I have a real nasty head cold, but if there's anyone who opposes the bill and wants to sit next to me, go ahead and invite them down.
Well, thank you, Representative Biskins. And, you know, I appreciate you bringing this bill before us today. I think it's an important thing to consider, but more importantly, to do something that I have been trying to do regularly lately, and that is to educate the people of Minnesota about the difficulties that our capital faces. And I commend you for teaming up with Governor Dayton and bringing this to this committee today. As a member of the task force on the commission on the restoration of the Capitol, just like to maybe add a little bit to some of the things that you've been saying, and that is what we've been told by the architect who did the examination of the building is that if the Capitol were a medical patient, the exterior is on life support. The mechanical is in critical condition. The plumbing is in critical condition. The electrical is in serious condition. And we need to do something. We need to do it soon. Now, where some of us, some of you, may not agree particularly with Representative Biskins is what method to use to pay it. And that's, I'm sure, where the discussion is going to be. There will be those who say that, this is not traditional sources of funding, and we are to use traditional sources of funding like bonding for the Capitol. We did ask the Department of Administration to do an analysis of how much legacy money, if any, could be used. What they said to us, and I do agree with you, Representative Biskins, that the final arbitrator is the legislature. But the Department of Administration report was that roughly $30 million could, if we chose, be legitimately used as legacy money for the Capitol. But it would be at the final stages of the program, roughly in 2015, dealing with the artwork and the finishing work that would be done then. So that's one of the opinions that's been given, but lots of people have lots of opinions, and that's what we'll be going through as we continue this debate. But the important thing is that we're bringing this out. Oh, by the way, I'm on Channel 11 News tonight at 10 talking about this. Just a brief commercial message there. But
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a face for radio, so that's not on Channel 11.
But it's not actually that we seek any publicity on this, but it's just very important that this message go out so that the people are not completely shocked by a $241 billion bill and how we're going to pay for it. So with that, Representative Dill, I believe you...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And boy, I mean, really, considering that the way I understand it, if you listen to Representative Rukabina, the Iron Range built the Capitol in the first place, so I'd certainly like, being that I'm an Iron Ranger, to take care of something that we already built. So I'm really for doing the restoration on the Capitol. It, like Representative Rudolph said, it's good. But you named off a group of projects, Representative Biskins, that I didn't hear any state buildings in that list. I heard Hennepin County and Clay County and some other stuff. So my question is it your opinion or the chair's opinion that capital projects are eligible for this? Because I didn't hear you say anything about state parks and a bathroom got remodeled or the Split Rock Lighthouse got remodeled. And that's where the supplanting problem may come in. I guess I would ask for the opinion of other members of this committee. And then I'd like to also ask the chair, do you support using the legacy money for... restoring the Capitol, Mr. Chair, as well as the question for Representative Biskin?
We'll let Representative Biskins go first, Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dill. When it comes to this whole issue of state versus county versus regional, landmark center funds were used. Of course, money does go to the Minnesota Historical Society for use. I will point out that out of the Parks and Trails Fund, which is under this same section of the Constitution. Back in 2011, we approved a $2.2 million for renewal and rehabilitation of state park buildings and facilities. So there is precedent in the more global fund of using this for state facilities.
I was interested in hearing what you then had to say, and thank you for that information. I'm not sure I see Representative Bouguinius twitching over there, so.
I did. Thank you. I did expect Representative Bouguinius to weigh in on this, but let me just say this: that to answer the question, do I think that legacy funding should be used? My opinion is that the capital should be restored with traditional sources of money. Bonding is my first choice in doing this. Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope I don't do any twitching here. But
kind of twitching the fingers, I saw it.
Okay. I think I was trying to signal the chair that I wanted to say that. The language for each of the parts, the four parts of the constitutional amendment, mm-hmm. are different, and they have different verbs. And the verb for parks and trails is supports, and it was the broadest and meant to be the broadest. So I don't think you can compare the language of one piece to the others, because the verbs are different.
Representative Biscuits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wiginius. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Absolutely, you are correct. And in this section is the only place you will find the word preserve. Preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage.
Okay, thank you. Other comments, questions from the committee? Anyone from the audience wish to, for or against, make any statements on this?
And I will move away.
Representative Biskins will move away from you. Anyone? Mr. Kelleher?
Mr. Chair, I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. Just wanted to add a couple things to the discussion. Of course, everyone in this room believes that the Minnesota State Capitol should be preserved. It's a gem. It's a national treasure that if you all have probably visited other state capitals across the country, and we see the genius of Cass Gilbert every time we walk around our state capitol. As we look at the Minnesota Constitution, I see this as a two-part test. And Representative Biskins quoted the language that allowed the permitted uses of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and it certainly does say to preserve Minnesota's history. But the second part of the two-part test that he referenced as well is the language which is often referred to as the supplement supplant or supplement substitute, and I'll just read it. You all know it well. The dedicated money under this section must supplement traditional sources of funding for these purposes and may not be used as a substitute. I just wanted to get up here quickly to clarify that the projects that Representative Biskins referenced were part of the grants program. They certainly meet the first part of the test as well as the second part of the test. You made appropriations for history projects, which include history programs and preserving historic buildings and historic sites. We at the Minnesota Historical Society have not used legacy dollars for capital projects. Those have been grant programs that have gone out to other organizations, largely nonprofits, who are not eligible for bond dollars. So the two-part test, the second part is the traditional sources of funding, and I think it's important to clarify that the examples that were cited, yes, they have preserved physical structures. That's permitted in the constitutional language as well as the appropriation language that you have done over two biennia. But there's a distinction between the state's capital budget or bonding. That's the traditional source of funding for the state of Minnesota taking care of its physical infrastructure, which is different from other organizations which apply for grants. I think the fear is that the precedent could be set. The state owns a rich stock of historic buildings around the state. It's not just the Capitol building. DHS, DNR, other state agencies own historic buildings. DNR has more historic structures than we do. If we start using funding from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for the Minnesota State Capitol, what's to stop using Arts and Cultural Heritage funds for other things that should be funded out of the bonding bill or the capital budget? So that's the thing I wanted to add to the discussion here about traditional sources of funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelleher. Any questions of Mr. Kelleher by the members? Okay, thank you. Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for your attention to this and hearing me out. I do appreciate it. Again, you know, not easy choices, difficult choices, but I think the law is clearly on our side to make these decisions with these funds. I've shown you two options of how the funds can be used. Of course, there are other potential options as well. I believe, yes, as Mr. Kelleher said, there are a lot of historical sites in the state of Minnesota and some beautiful buildings and wonderful structures, some county-owned, some locally-owned, some state-owned. But there is only one capital. There is only one capital, and it's our responsibility to take care of it. I know you take that responsibility seriously. I hope you also take these proposals seriously. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Biskins, and you are again to be commended for bringing this forward today, and we will lay it over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Now we have a couple of more very quick bills, and they happen to be mine. And Representative Keel, would you care to?
Chair Erdahl, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move to lay House File 2832 for a possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Okay. Go ahead, Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Under this bill, $50,000 appropriated in fiscal year 2013 from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for the purpose of completing two documentaries on the American Civil War and the Dakota, U.S. Dakota War, to develop an educational website that provides Minnesota educators and students with access to this material. And also, and this is one of the main reasons for this, to allow them to travel outside of the state of Minnesota and expend money for these projects. To perhaps anticipate a question from Representative Murphy, the reason is that if you take the Dakota War itself, you can't really tell the story of this war without going into North and South Dakota, because in end of 1862 into 1863, that's where the war went. It was a six-week war in Minnesota, but then continued essentially into the Dakota Territory, and there are sites there that it would be important to go to tell this story. For example, Big Mound, Whitestone Hill, Crow Creek. And so that's the purpose of asking for $50,000 out of our funds to do this.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. Do you have any testifiers?
Yes, I do.
Will you please come forward and identify yourself for the record?
Hello, I'm Diane Steinbach from Twin Cities Public Television. I'm Director of Arts and Cultural Programming.
Thank you, Diane.
We have been generously given a legacy grant for the next biennium, and in that, out of that, that funding, we have proposed to do two history documentaries that, based on the sesquicentennial this year of the Dakota War and the Civil War, to try to take two wars that people are still trying to heal from 150 years later, and drill down a little bit more to present some of the reasons that it's taken so long to heal from the consequences of the war. So in order to do that, one of the things, you know, Twin Cities Public Television has produced a number of documentaries in the past on the Dakota conflict and also First Regiment, but they're broad sweeping sort of Ken Burns type documentaries, and we will also be rebroadcasting those as well when we finish these two documentaries to have a full body of programming. But what we hope to do with these documentaries is to really call out some of the individuals, key members of both wars, and how both wars affected each other. And so it'll be produced as our programs, 2 one-hour programs that will be broadcast together, but produced in segments so that they're classroom friendly, because we're really interested in making sure that a website is developed where some of these segments can live, but also that teachers can use them in 8 to 10 minute segments, but produced as a whole, where we identify some of the key players and what some of the controversies were and some of the battles that were fought. So it we think will be for school children and teachers much more accessible, and so we're asking for some additional funds so that we can develop that website and also lesson guides to go along with the programs and try to just basically develop a more common understanding and also use them as a community engagement tool to get more discussion going, to tell the stories that have not been told, to present the absent narratives of some of the issues involved in these wars and why they happen. So we hope that you will look favorably upon this so that we can do a more fully accessible production than just two documentaries that get quite a bit of airtime, but these will live online forever and ever.
Thank you, Ms. Steinbach.
Yeah.
Chair Adel, did you have?
I just want to stress, as I have been doing today, and kind of the theme of the types of bills that I've been bringing up with, is to expand the education level of what happened in Minnesota 150 years ago. The tribal chairs, in a meeting that they had with the governor and the director of the Historical Society, Stephen Elliott, and myself, and some other folks, they came up with three specific requests. They wanted a repudiation of the statement by Alexander Hamilton. I did it again. That's the second time I've done it. Alexander Ramsey, where on September 9th, 1862, he urged the extermination of the Dakota people. They would like Governor Dayton to repudiate that statement. Also, they would like a history month, Dakota History Month in September. And this is why I'm going through this, they want a review of curriculum and how this event, the Dakota conflict, the Dakota War, is taught to our students. And I think that what is being offered here, will be offered by TPT, is important in terms of being teachers being able to use this in curriculum to help to teach more about the events, again, of 150 years ago. So.
Okay, thank you. Did Mr. Straczynski have something to add?
No, Madam Chair. Bill Straczynski, I just want to thank Representative Erdahl for bringing this matter forward. Particularly, it was problematic for us for our travel and the restrictions in Minnesota. also he talked about that earlier. But thank you very much, Representative Erdahl, committee.
Thank you. Are there any other testifiers? Questions of committee? Representative Murphy.
Representative Erdahl. Are we talking about 2832?
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Am I?
And is this the whole... Is the whole TPT plan covered by the $50,000 appropriation?
Madam
the
Chair.
The whole plan for this going to North Dakota or South Dakota, going to these places outside of Minnesota? And the segments and the education plans and all part of the $50,000?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, in our bill last year, we disbursed $800,000, right?
$400,000.
A year.
Mm-hmm.
Both?
Mm-hmm. That's both.
All right. Mm-hmm. $400,000 last year. That was to do two documentaries. And they discovered a need for some extra funding for the things that are listed in the bill, but primarily for travel outside of the state of Minnesota. And again, the story can't be told unless you go beyond the boundaries of this state. He goes out to Killdeer Mountain, which is in your caucus room, DFLers, which was our caucus room a couple years ago. The back wall, that's killed.
Yeah.
Now, Representative Murphy. The back wall is...
Someday.
Is, yes, well, that's probably true. Killdeer Mountain is in the back wall. And these are events important to Minnesota that were part of the Minnesota story, that Minnesota soldiers went to and bought. And it's going to cost a little bit of money, not the entire $50,000. They've got some other things in here with website development and curriculum. But part of this will be expenses to go into the Dakotas.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
Thank you for that clarification. Then, so with the money from last year, and the $50,000 new, the total project would be paid for?
No. As a matter of fact, we are in the process of applying for some additional grants. We have a total of $396,000 that we received for the initial two documentaries. Most of our documentaries cost about $400,000 each, but we promised to do two, so we had half. So as we started delving into the subject matter, obviously we could see that this is a story that needs much more ancillary material than just production funding. So we have most of the production funding from the initial appropriation. And what we're hoping to do with this, it's basically to supplement the website. We're also doing some, we have a panel of Native American consultants and advisors. And this would cover about $2,000 of that would be some stipend fee for them to participate in advising us. And then Dakota language translations, it's about $5,000. But the primary, we had no money for travel. And again, as Representative Erdahl has kindly pointed out, it's nearly impossible to tell the story without it. That's about $15,000 for 7 days of travel. So between that, the $10,000 that would go toward construction of a website for teachers, the translations, and our experts and consultants, that's the $50,000. We're looking for another $100,000 rounding off that we're going to corporations and individuals and some foundations for. So we're asking the Legacy Committee to give us $50,000 to get us started on this expanded budget so that we can do the education piece primarily.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Steinbeck.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Erdahl.
and Ms. Steinbach.
Ms. Steinbach. Mm-hmm. I think you told me enough this last time to make me more comfortable. But if you could reconfigure your total amounts so the 15,000 7 days of travel, which I agree is very important, but then that could come out of the money that you're talking about corporations, because they understand travel a lot because they're global, and they understand that travel outside of state lines is important for some things and maybe not so important for others. And then the $50,000 from Minnesota taxpayers, I know guests that come into our state and pay the sales tax too, but that goes into the legacy fund, could then be Minnesota money, Minnesota taxes for Minnesotans in Minnesota. And that's kind of what we wrote in the framework in the first place, that the legacy funds are for Minnesotans right. in Minnesota kind of thing. And if you could reword your grant requests and your projected uses of the funds so that Minnesota money is in there, and then the $50,000 would be for the website and for the continuation of the production and for the education of the Minnesota kids.
Representative Murphy, thank you. And Madam Chair, I'm absolutely sure we can do that. In fact, I'm sorry I didn't think of it ahead of time. We're applying to, one of the places we're applying is the Native American Public Television grant-making authority that's funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And if they also fund the program, that would be a perfect, absolutely perfect place, and they would certainly fund that. And that would probably give us the additional $100,000 that we need. In addition, this story would probably then be broadcast nationally if they give it a blessing and we do receive funding from them. So the story would be told even further, and it makes perfect sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. We could maybe find a part for you in the documentary.
I would be glad to participate. Happy.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
I'm going to make this.
Mr. Hughes?
Yeah, I'm going to make this brief. And I'll get up to the microphone so you can report.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
Thank you very much.
How much
does it get on the floor? I'm going to be careful so you don't
hurt. No, I'm fine.
You're more important. Mark Hughes again, and this time I'm speaking on behalf of TPT. I've had the good fortune of being a Studio Society member for a lot of years, and one of the things that I think, if my memory serves me right, the Legacy Fund does is sponsor programs like MNO, Minnesota Original, seen Sunday nights at 6 on Channel 2. And for those of you that might want to learn more about the good things that Channel 2 does, or TPT, I don't know how old I am, but maybe we should set up studio tours or something like that. I'm afraid that if we would lose something like GPT, we take it for granted now as it is, but if we would lose it, it's an educational tool, but it's also very intelligent entertainment. And I strongly support it, and I hope you all do too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes.
Thank you. And, you know, we are planning field trips for later on.
Good to know.
Madam Chair, I did not put him up to that.
Oh, okay.
But I do appreciate it.
Thank you. I have to work on getting TPT up at my house. I can't get that yet.
Huh?
Okay, Chair Erdahl, do you have any more?
No.
All right.
That's it. Thank you.
So we're going to renew this. Oh, this is going to be laid over. Right. Okay. One more bill you have, right?
One more.
Okay. Is that House File 2768? Have I got that right?
Yes. And, Madam Chair, this will also be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay.
Now, this is the $800,000 the State Historical Society wound up not spending, returned to them from projects that were not completed. And this is how we plan on allocating it for this time. basically $200,000 to statewide historic and cultural grants, $400,000 for statewide history programs administered by MHS, and $200,000 for history partnerships, total funding $800,000. We need to do this so that they could spend the money that we appropriated last time and was turned back to them.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. Do you have any testifiers?
We don't need to unless there are questions.
Okay. Is there any questions of members? Looks like that's it. So, any other comments?
No, that's it, I guess. Okay. You can adjourn the meeting, I guess. It's late over for a possible and,
okay. Well, thank you very much. So, we're going to lay over House File 2768, and I believe, for possible inclusion. Thank you. And then with that, I believe we're case closed. Right?
Well, King, this case is closed.
Oh, sorry. Well, King, this case is closed.